listening to The Foundation of Wellness, a refreshing take on diet and lifestyle. With Jessica Dogert, a registered dietitian nutritionist, and Marisa Moon, a primal health coach.
Hi, you guys. This is Jessica, reaching out to let you know that Marisa and I tried something new in this episode, and we recorded our interaction over video conference. Please excuse the echo and audio issues here. We're going to perfect it by next episode. This episode is still packed with goodies for you, so please enjoy.
Today's episode, it's episode 18, and it's going to be all about ways to fix your sleep. And last week, Marisa and I explained how lack of sleep actually interferes with productivity and just overall health. We also explained how sleeping well has just become such a huge priority in the wellness world today. And we walked you through so many common sleep disruptors that could be sabotaging not only your sleep, but also your weight and your food cravings and your immunity and your happiness.
Yeah, I mean, it's because today's hectic world, we're all like overscheduled and we sacrifice our sleep to squeeze in more work on our laptops or our phones or at home. And just like that one more TV episode, sleep is easy to skip because it feels less important in the moment compared to finishing up something that has our brain, our interest at that time. And the price of missing out on even an hour or two of sleep is much greater than we can measure with our own awareness. That's why last week I explained how sleep expert and neuroscientist Matthew Walker gives example after example in his book called Why We Sleep of human studies showing that people who are sleep deprived don't even know or conceive of how sleep deprived they are, not even by a long shot.
I mean, that is so right. I mean, hopefully these two podcast episodes will just be a catalyst for change in your personal relationship with sleep. I mean, getting sufficient high quality sleep, it's going to sharpen your memory and your brain function. It's going to help your muscles build and recover. It's going to help your immune system detoxify. You're going to fight off illnesses. You're going to recover from injury. You're going to prevent common diseases like cancer and heart attacks. I mean, the list goes on.
If you're not getting 8 hours of sleep each night on a routine schedule, then it's imperative that you find concrete ways to carve out more sleep time in your life. And we're going to give you ideas how to do that during this entire episode.
Yeah, I mean, now is the time to make steps in the right direction, and health coaches can actually help you with that. You know, if you want more personalized attention, and if you feel like your present circumstances make quality sleep near impossible, you could perhaps allow me and Marisa to just coach you through it. You know, we are taking a deep dive today. Sure, but there's so much more to consider that we can't possibly include in a podcast episode. So if you are looking for that one-on-one attention, you know, I could be reached at jessdogert@gmail.com, and Marisa, she can be reached at marisa@marisamoon.com.
Yeah, thanks, Jess, for that, because from my personal experience, I know I needed help at the time because it was like an ongoing battle with my sleep deprivation. Probably would have been done a lot quicker if I had a health coach. Mm-hmm. Let's dive into the first topic we mentioned last week, which is setting an ideal environment for sleep, because that can make or break the sleep routine that you have. It can really be something that's going to set the tone or give you the possibility of having a good night's sleep. And you want to give your body all the right signals that it's time for bed.
Yeah. So like we mentioned last week, one very common sleep disruptor is being either too hot or too cold. And since our body temperature rises right before sleep, a slightly cold temperature is going to be conducive to just getting that good night's rest. So if you have an air conditioner, hopefully you guys do, you want to turn the temperature slightly down to just ensure that the room is a little bit chilly. And they always say somewhere between 60 to 67 degrees is going to be ideal for you.
Yeah, that sure sounds cold, but I know I benefit a lot from having the room at 68, and I could probably go even lower. Mm-hmm. But there are some more elements that will positively like affect your sleep environment, and that includes keeping your computers and your laptops out of the bedroom and no TV unless you just want the sound from the TV. I understand a lot of people find comfort in that. You can actually turn off the picture of the TV using the menu and still play the sound. Nobody does that. They should. And you want the room to be pitch black, right, Jessica? No bright clocks, no alarm clocks blaring those bright lights. You want to turn them face down, face towards the wall, and even your night lights. Trade those old night lights in for the automatic ones that sense you walking by, or you could keep a flashlight next to your bedstand if you're that worried about it.
Do you wear a sleep mask? I do. I mean, I think
yes.
One of my favorite things, like one of my favorite sleep masks. It's like so simple, but it's like, it helps so much. I love it.
Eric and I both do. And it started a long time ago. I walked out of my room when my brother was sleeping over in our living room, and he and his girlfriend were wearing a sleep mask. And I was like, are you guys for real right now? This had to be like 7 years ago. And he was like, it helps a lot, Marisa. That's what my brother was saying. And my husband and I were joking about it. And then we realized like that might help because Eric sleeps during the day. You know, he's a night shift worker. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, let's try it. And sure enough, we've been hooked long before I even knew I had all these sleep issues. I was sleeping with a sleep mask, girl. That's the best.
It's an addiction. I feel like I can't live without it. I do really believe it's one of the things I cannot live without.
I know. It really like just tells you like it's time for bed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So our listeners, if one thing you take away, just invest in the sleep mask, I guess. Okay. Yes. So you should definitely have a clear physical separation between your bedroom and just other areas of the house, like where you work or where you really enjoy entertainment. So that means no TV in your bed, right? I think another common sleep disruptor that we mentioned last week is just working on our laptops or our cell phones in bed. I mean, how many people do that? I know
everyone.
Yeah. So research actually suggests that the blue LED light from these devices, our cell phones and our laptops, after sunset, it's going to disrupt circadian rhythm. And it's also going to suppress melatonin production. So that's really just going to trick your brain into thinking that it's still daylight and that it's not even time for sleep yet.
Yeah, I was reading some of the work by Mark Sisson. He's the ancestral health expert and author of The Primal Blueprint and Primal Connection. And he suggests that limiting your nighttime exposure to digital and artificial lights should be your first line of defense for improving your sleep quality.
Believe
right?
It.
So first, I suggest to listeners to change your screens to turn to a warm tint of color at night. This is about 90 minutes to 2 hours before bedtime, right?
Right. And you can also use an app like F.Lux, L-U-X. So during the day, our computer screens look really, really good. They're designed to look like the sun. But think about 9 p.m., 10 p.m., 3 a.m. You probably should not be looking at the sun. So F.Lux is actually going to fix this. It makes the color of your computer's display just adapt to the time of the day. So think warm at night, and then like the sunlight during the day.
This is huge, you guys. You can also do this on your iPhone using the night shift function. That's what I do. I set it to change at the same time each morning and each night. So I don't have to think about it. I don't have to remember to turn it on. And it's just on this cycle at 9 o'clock, my night mode, night shift function goes on. And there's also a night mode app and many more apps like that for Androids. And you can also order these inexpensive amber glasses. They're called gaming glasses sometimes, or blue light blocking glasses. I get mine on Amazon. They're like 12 bucks. They're huge. They actually go over our reading glasses because Eric and I wear those at night. And we just laugh. Like, we look hilarious, but it's the best. I can't even watch TV or movies at night without it.
I mean, these glasses, they are designed to block most blue light that a person actually encounters after it's really dark outside. So you almost want to think of them as like reverse sunglasses. You wear them inside instead of outside, and then you want to wear them because they're blocking that artificial light. They're not blocking the sun. And it's really cool because science is proving that wearing these blue light blocking glasses, it actually helps you sleep better. So a study of about 20 adults who wore either blue light blocking glasses or UV light blocking glasses for 3 hours before bed found that both sleep quality and mood, it actually improved among those in the group who wore the blue light blocking glasses compared to...
For sure.
Yeah. And I think it's really cool. I mean, I know you mentioned that you can get the glasses on Amazon and things like that for like $12. I really like Swanwick Sleep brand. S-W-I-C-K.
Cool. We'll put all these in the show notes in case you can't really make out some of the specifics we're giving you guys. And just remember, this isn't a crutch that you should be using every night forever, now that you know that you can block some blue light using these apps or these glasses. The goal is really to break the habit of using electronics near bedtime, because you're going to notice the benefits right away. And guess what? That's how it used to be before we all had smartphones.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, you know? It's like when we didn't have this 10 years ago, it's like we slept like babies. I think I did. Okay, so really another common sleep disruptor that we mentioned last week is going to be stress and anxiety. So stress and anxiety, they are major sleep disruptors, and you really want to train your body to just wind down and relax to prepare for sleep. So think about taking a warm bath or meditation or just cuddling with your partner, even writing in a journal. It's a really good way to just think through your problems and clear your head before bed.
Totally. I can't tell you how helpful bedtime journaling has been for some of my clients. Mm-hmm. I suggest that listeners take 5 to 10 minutes before bed and write down everything that's on your mind. This can be in the form of a journal if you're stressed out, especially about relationships, anything you're emotionally tied to or frustrated about. This can also be in the form of lists instead of journaling if you're stressed about work or home responsibilities or even the excitement of a new idea you've got in your head or a project you're starting. I think it's even better when you start with something called a brain dump. If you have stress, anxiety, or your overwhelm is in high gear, brain dumps are like this unorganized thing where you just literally dump out every single thing that's in your brain. And you don't care what order it's in. It's just kind of like, I got to get it all out. And even if you don't have to do something for 6 months from now, sometimes you'll have anxiety about it. It goes in the brain dump list. And after you brain dump, you circle the things that are actually urgent and need to get done now. And that gives you somewhere to start tomorrow and the clarity you need. And you just kind of like get this sense of relief from getting it onto paper and beginning this organization of your ideas. And keep the lighting low while you're doing this, if it's close to your bedtime, because you don't want to interrupt your circadian rhythm. You want to use just as much light you need to be able to read or write during journaling time, wear your orange glasses, those kind of things.
Cool. I mean, I'm really into the idea of like brain dumping, just because, you know, I feel like something I do every night is like have my to-do list for tomorrow. And it's almost a sense of brain dumping, because it's like, okay, I have so much on my mind. I have so much to get done tomorrow. But if I write it out, it really gives me this like peace and sense of like, okay, you know, it's, I know what I have to do tomorrow. It's all written out. It can like be off my brain. So something I really want to do is just touch on two very trendy things that help you sleep deeper and like stress less. And one is going to be weighted blankets. I don't know if you've ever heard of weighted blankets before. They've been reported to feel like a big hug. And I love hugs, but they boost your endorphins. They increase the production of serotonin, aka your happiness hormone. So I've heard really, really good things about this one brand called Swaddle Weighted Blanket. It's kind of pricey. It's like $120, but they claim it to be this therapeutic weighted blanket that stimulates the feeling of being held. So helping you feel grounded and relaxed so that you could sleep really deep and just have that anxiety relief. I personally have never experimented with it. However, I'm very intrigued and I'm very willing to try anything to get a good night's sleep. But the second really trendy thing I also want to talk about is CBD oil. I think it's gaining a lot of traction in the wellness world. People are just praising it for its ability to transform a person's sleep and also temper that anxiety. And for some, I do believe this statement to be true. It's been the missing link in their health puzzle. You know, I know that's a really bold statement, but not only does it make people fall asleep easier, but it also influences the sleep cycle, which is really cool. So if you think about it, sleep, it has multiple cycles with different phases. And CBD oil is going to increase the third phase, which is the phase of deep sleep. So it's really probable that this phase is troublesome for those who have like a sleeping disorder. So in addition to CBD just like decreasing the duration of REM sleep, which is like when dreaming occurs. So I think it's really profound in the sense that, you know, it's going to reduce your REM sleep. People are going to dream less. Your memory is going to be increased and symptoms of depression are going to be decreased. I mean, it's really interesting to me. So I'm into it.
Yeah, that's really cool. And just for listeners who haven't heard of CBD oil, or maybe you kind of did, but you're hesitant, there's many of them that ensure they're guaranteed to be 100% THC free. So even if they're made from hemp or cannabis, they are not the kind that will give you any sort of hallucinogenic properties that's associated with those, you know, plants typically. So these are really just sort of medicinal yet over the counter, you know, therapeutic oils, or sometimes they're in the form of tinctures or candies. So there's also different ways that you can get CBD into your system. And all the brands vary in, you know, the quality and the effectiveness and the strength. So there's actually a lot you'd have to learn about that there, but I don't think there's really any reason for concern regarding harm or side effects. So it's safe for even children and babies to use.
Right. And definitely, I think it'd be fun to do something on CBD oil in the future because there's so much to talk about it for it. But you know, I think another common sleep disruptor that we mentioned last week is just overindulging before bed. I mean, I know I've done it before. I eat dinner so late at night. I think the bad thing about it is that it truly leads to a restless night. I mean, you know, we are not meant to go to bed on a full belly, and bedtime is going to be reparative mode for our brains. So digesting food is simply going to take away from that.
Yeah, that's really true. You have to eat your last meal 2 or more hours, ideally a little over 2 hours before you go to bed, so that the digestion's not interfering with your sleep quality. You want your digestive system to relax when you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do it because your schedule, it just won't allow it, then it's best to eat your larger meals for breakfast and for lunch, and just have like a soup or a small portion for dinner so that digestion is a breeze. And if you're curious, but you're not convinced that sleep disrupts your body by eating late, you particularly, then try the app called Sleep Cycle, which allows you to track your sleep with something else in your life that you want to see how it relates or affects your sleep. You can list late dinner as something you want to track, and you would check that box on the nights you had a late dinner before you go to sleep. And over the course of like a week of using that straight, you'd see a trend on a graph in the Sleep Cycle app that you could learn. Does a late dinner really interfere with your sleep quality?
Cool. You know, I think this is just a perfect segue to kind of mention what you eat throughout the day matters. I think a study found that participants with a higher fiber intake, you want to think fruits, veggies, nuts, and seeds, actually spent more time in that restorative, slow wave sleep at night. And on the other hand, people who didn't eat enough fiber and people who ate too much sugar, they experienced a more disturbed sleep, which is really interesting to me. And I think I also kind of want to highlight some foods that contain nutrients that help you sleep. So think about foods like almonds and cashews. They contain something called magnesium, and magnesium is a mineral that acts like a natural sedative. Even a small deficiency in magnesium, it could actually lead to trouble in the sleep department. And then there are foods like tart cherries, and tart cherries are going to be that source of melatonin. So we've talked about melatonin a few times, but it's going to be a sleep hormone that we produce naturally, and that can be reduced playing on our phones late at night. So that's
oh, definitely. But for some people that are either diabetic or pre-diabetic, or if you just consume a high carbohydrate diet like most Americans, you know, bread at every meal, lots of potatoes, dessert every single day, then you might benefit from a small snack like Jessica was just suggesting. And just be sure it's small. That should help you sleep soundly. Even adding a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar to a glass of water at night also helps your overnight blood sugar levels, helping you sleep soundly and keep your blood sugar stable so you're not going to wake up in the middle of the night wanting to eat again.
Yeah, you know, I feel like eating late at night, it's a really confusing topic. There's some research that shows like when you eat calories late at night, you really don't burn them as efficiently. And also when you eat late at night, your body's kind of focusing on digesting versus recovering, which is a really bad thing. So like we all need that recovery time, which is going to be our beauty sleep. And I think one group of people that really shouldn't be eating anything right before bed is those who suffer from acid reflux. So when you lie down after eating, you're much more likely to have that reflux. But meanwhile, there are some studies that show small meals before bed, like having snacks of like tart cherries or almonds or cashews, it could be beneficial for muscle growth and even a healthy heart.
Yeah, it's just a matter of how much, right? And you have to figure out what works for you by listening to your body and even using a sleep tracker to start noticing patterns that you might be missing.
Right. Okay, so another common sleep disruptor we mentioned last week is going to be drinking alcohol near bedtime. So alcohol, of course, it's going to help us all fall asleep, but it's really going to prevent us from getting the restorative rest because it disrupts our sleep cycle. So remember that it takes a good hour per drink for alcohol to clear our body. And if you enjoy a nightcap, you want to make sure that you consume it with enough time for the alcohol to leave your system before going to bed. But here's an idea too. I think instead of alcohol being a nightcap, you could start drinking something like chamomile tea every night. It's going to be like a nightly routine that's not only relaxing, but it's also shown to be as effective as sleep medication over time. Chamomile is, which I think is pretty cool. I think one more thing that we talked about last week was drinking coffee, tea, and drinks and foods that contain caffeine before bed. And a study found that, you know, caffeine consumed even 6 hours before bed, it's gonna disrupt a good night's sleep. So let's say, for example, your bedtime's like 10 p.m., you'll wanna cut off caffeine beverages by 4 p.m.
Oh, I know that's a hard one for coffee drinkers that don't think they're sensitive to it, and they're literally like living on caffeine just to get through life. I don't think caffeine drinkers are going to take us seriously, but all we can do is just provide the listeners with a thought in hopes that it'll inspire you to make better choices.
Marissa, what about bedtime routine and, you know, a wake-up time routine and just not prioritizing sleep?
Well, yeah, you've heard us mention a routine a few times because there's actually so many things that come together to create that for you. Your circadian rhythm, like we talked about last week, needs a routine to optimize hormone flow and just to ensure that you're getting sufficient sleep. It's no joke. Remember that melatonin depends on cues from your circadian rhythm, and so many other sleep processes are then triggered by the melatonin. They all need this routine from you in order to work properly. So how do you even figure out your routine, one that works for you? Well, first, what time you got to get up? Let's say it's 6:30. 8 hours before 6:30 a.m. is 10:30 p.m. That means I would actually set an alarm for 9:30 p.m. to remind me that sleep's coming up in 1 hour. Then I'd set the bedtime function on my iPhone. iPhones have that function, you guys, and it'll remind you at 10:15, I got to go upstairs and brush my teeth for bed. You can download an app from the Google Play Store called Sleepy Time if you got Androids, and it'll do the same thing as the sleep cycle app I was talking about and the bedtime function on the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, you have to prioritize sleep, you guys. You have to prioritize developing a routine. So that truly means saying no to your partner if they ask if you want to watch another episode of Game of Thrones. That means reminding yourself that the emails can wait until tomorrow when you think you just have to check them really quick before you turn off the lights. I mean, sleep matters, and your routine really depends upon your commitment. You know, what else needs to happen in order to develop a true sleep routine? I'm going to tell you. Okay, so you need to apply the things that we mentioned prior to this. So you need to have that proper environment in your bedroom because it sets like the cues to your body that you're on a sleep routine. You need to limit technology. You need to do things like add an enjoyment element. So that's going to be like journaling or, you know, writing what you're grateful for or listening to a meditation exercise. Once these things are like put into a routine, you are sending all of the right signals to your circadian rhythm.
Yeah, those are good pointers. I think that was one of the things that we started with in my house, the aroma diffuser. And Eric will even ask me, can you do the oils? Can you do the oils? And so it's really become something that, like the sleep mask, it just tells our brain like it's time for bed. Yeah. And some those same apps that I've mentioned, you guys, Sleep Cycle and Sleepy Time, they will both wake you up during your lightest stage of sleep. I remember being surprised that the apps and the alarms are still going to work when I have my phone on Do Not Disturb or on airplane mode. But the cool thing is that the Sleep Cycle app automatically mutes your notifications once you set that wake up alarm on the app. So that's cool. And an equally awesome function on these apps is that you can wake up to the sounds of nature instead of annoying beeps and stressful sounds of common alarms. That's probably my favorite part about it. I just wake up to birds chirping. Yeah. There are even alarm clocks that you can buy if you're not into the apps. And these alarm clocks play nature sounds and they'll like gradually light up brighter and brighter and increase the sound more and more to wake you up in a peaceful and natural way instead of jarring and annoying like an alarm.
That actually scares you. I mean, I know so many alarms like literally just jolt you awake, and that's not good for you either.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that you can use these apps to detect when you're in a lighter stage of sleep so that when it does wake you up, you're not super groggy. Which is the worst. I mentioned last week, I struggled with sleep position, sleep apnea. I only figured out that I even had sleep apnea because my husband was paying attention to me while I slept. He was trying to help me figure out what was causing all my sleep issues. And he noticed that I had sleep apnea whenever I was sleeping on my back. So my suggestion to the listeners is to either ask your partner to let you know if you're snoring or if you stop breathing when you're sleeping. Or just work on a new sleep position if you already know you're a snorer. Even if your snores are like little and girly like mine were, you know, it's usually a sign that you're not getting enough oxygen flow.
Right.
Sleep apnea is incredibly dangerous. Young people die from it.
Yeah.
And even without that frightening risk, you're still getting too little of oxygen and you're missing out on reparative deep sleep. So it's good to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually very intrigued by sleep apnea. I definitely want to just learn more about it because I think it's something that could potentially like been running in my family. So I'm intrigued by it. It's so cool that you fixed your sleep routine or just like your sleep position and now it's like magically gone. I find that so intriguing. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about EMFs, electromagnetic field. You guys, I found this so incredibly interesting. There's actually a crystal called, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right or wrong, but it's shungite, S-H-U-N-G-I-T-E, and it's actually used to protect against EMFs. You know, we are constantly surrounded by technology. Think about our cell phones and our computers and our TVs and Wi-Fi. I mean, the list goes on. So each of them actually radiate these man-made EMFs. And many people experience EMF sensitivity, and EMFs have actually been linked to constriction of blood flow to our organs, poor digestion in our immune systems, increased blood pressure, heart rate, and even blood sugar, things like arthritis, anxiety, and depression. And Apple even has a disclaimer encouraging you not to hold your phone directly to your head. And fortunately, there is going to be production from EMFs. And I just think it's crazy because EMFs are everywhere, yet I bet none of us think about it throughout the day. And that could be something that's affecting us so seriously. But I think it's really cool because this crystal that I talked about, shungite, it has the reputation of being able to absorb and neutralize these frequencies. So I think it's pretty cool.
It is really cool. I'll have to look into that. I wonder how much of the crystal you actually need and if it really works or if it's just some big marketing thing. Like, you never know. Mm-hmm. I know when I first learned that I was sensitive to EMFs while I sleep, which I explained on the last episode how shocked I was, I found a million claims on the internet about different ways to block EMFs. And then I'd find so many other sites that were disputing those claims. So it seems we'll just have to do some digging for ourselves and decide if we want to invest in something that can block EMFs or if we just have to try and eliminate that transmitting in our own house. There's just a lot to learn. And I like that you mentioned, Jessica, Apple suggesting not to hold the phone close to our heads because they also emphasize the importance of not allowing children to keep it close to their body either, and especially their heads. And so many children, their parents just give them the tablet or the cell phone to keep them busy. And they're even using them in school. And it's so scary because they're in a developmental phase that is far more sensitive to the effects of that than it is in adults.
Mm-hmm.
And something else scary is that I learned that all cell phone companies give you your new phone with the little pamphlet, the instruction manual, and inside that is a warning that says you must keep your phone at least 2 inches away from your body at all times. I mean, that's not fair to guys. Men keep their phones in their pockets.
Right.
You remember when we went to go see Dave Asprey speak? Dave Asprey is the Bulletproof executive and a famous biohacker. And Dave explained that because he learned that the EMFs could affect his reproductive abilities, he didn't want to keep his phone in his front pocket like most men do because it'd be too close to the jewels, you know what I mean? And so he decided to, he had this one pair of pants that had like a side pocket above his knee on the side of his thigh. And he loved it so much that he decided to get all of his pants with that same style. He would get a pocket added right in that same spot. And for years, he was putting his phone in that pocket. Later, he goes to the doctor and gets a bone density test. And his bone density was perfect all over the rest of his body, except in the spot where he keeps his cell phone. He had poor bone density. Isn't that nuts?
I remember hearing that story and being mind blown because, like I mentioned before, we don't even think, I personally don't even think about EMFs, yet they can be affecting us so poorly. Like, I think about having my cell phone, like talking to my mom on the phone, and then I'm like, what if that causes brain fog or just, you know, anything? You know, it's just crazy to think about.
It is. My biggest tip for the listeners is just try putting your phone on airplane mode, especially when you're getting ready for bed. You can get a landline. How crazy is that? You can get a landline phone. They're super cheap. I know. They're so cheap, you guys. So there's no excuse. And the landline will serve as your emergency phone number that your friends and family can call if you need to be reached overnight. Mm-hmm. Don't bring your computers in the bedroom, especially while you sleep. Remember to keep that environment only for sleep. And if you feel like you've tried everything on this list and you're still not sleeping properly, then you may want to go see a functional medicine doctor or a naturopathic doctor who can help you to find out if it's related to something like your detoxification. If you're having poor detoxification, you need to work out some support for that. You can take supplements. There's certain things that you can do, a protocol that your functional medicine doctor can give you, because poor detox can keep you awake at night.
Yeah, and fixing that problem could truly be the missing piece of the puzzle for you. So definitely, you know, if you're interested in dealing with a functional medicine doctor, you totally should. So I think we should talk about travel. You know, when we're in travel, think about it. Like in a car, on a train, on planes, our bodies are in motion, and that means they're disconnected from Earth. And Earth is going to be like our home base if you think about it. It just tells us exactly where we are. And every time we step outside, we're actually going to receive feedback from the Earth, like telling us where we are, and like what season it is, if it's summer or fall, what time it is, if it's day or nighttime. And this, in turn, actually helps our digestion and nutrient absorption and elimination. I think it's really cool to think about. But when we're actually in motion, that means we're disconnected from the Earth. And that means our bodies actually have no idea where we are or what's going on. And so that means our vata, which is like Ayurvedic, it's going to be like air and space energy, that goes out of balance, and that is going to lead to bloating and gas and constipation and dry skin and even things like IBS. So when you're traveling on a plane, I would consider to fast, and that's really known to just help with jet lag. And researchers are suggesting that, you know, because food is so essential for survival as sleep is, hunger can actually influence our circadian rhythm just as much as changes in light and dark patterns do. So my suggestion to you would be trying to fast on your next flight. You could bring a lot of herbal tea and a water bottle and just keep yourself occupied with books and movies and work and emails and journaling, or even just sleep on a plane.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up this good point that makes me want to say, well, it depends, because food and hunger do influence circadian rhythm, which is why it's important for you to fast or to eat, depending on what your body would normally be doing in the time zone that you're traveling to. So let's say you're traveling from Hawaii to Chicago, like I just was a few weeks ago. It's 2 p.m. when I catch my flight in Hawaii, which means it's actually 7 p.m. in Chicago where I'm going. That means I'd usually be eating dinner by 7 or 8 o'clock p.m. Chicago time. I should eat on the plane to start giving my body cues that I am switching time zones and I need my circadian rhythm to catch up. It's kind of tricky, but eating or fasting during a time that makes sense in the time zone you're going to is one of the things you can do a little by little, a few days leading up to your flight, especially when you're on a long trip like I was. That would have helped me a lot. Last week, I shared with you guys my devastating jet lag experience, and I was learning so much about it afterwards, trying to make it better. And there was so much preventative stuff I could have done, like waking up an hour later each day, avoiding sunlight an hour earlier each day so that I could start telling my body what time zone it's going to be in Chicago when I get home. And eating at the times that relate closer to home, little by little, gradually at the end of my trip would have helped a lot. So when I finally put in the efforts to change my circadian rhythm, Jessica, on like the third day when I canceled the podcast and I was like, I like cannot even think straight. I'm crying all the time and I'm a mess. So I went out on my back porch in the afternoon, like getting as much sunlight as I could, even though I was crying. Yes, I know it sounds so pitiful, but it's the honest truth. And because exposing my body to sunlight is starting to give my body cues what time it is of the day here. And then at night, I was like the orange blocking glasses, no electronics. I took melatonin and I was doing all my sleep routine stuff. And gosh, there's probably even more I did, you guys, but next morning I woke up and I felt good.
Yeah.
I felt back to normal, and it could be a coincidence, but the point is I could have saved myself probably 3 days of agony if I would have started applying those things much sooner. So to all of our business travelers out there, jet lag is no joke. Remember, east is the beast and west is best. So if you're traveling east on the plane, it's time to take it seriously that your body might really suffer like mine did.
You know, I always, when I talk to people about what they do for work and how they travel so much, I'm like, oh, I wish I could have that job and travel. Like, no, you really don't. It's probably because of the jet lag they experience. And for me, I actually feel bad for them just because, you know, if you think about like, you know, coming off a plane and not feeling well, it's like, that could be perhaps be a whole day ruined for you. And like, it's just about feeling good every single day. So we really want to help you guys prevent that from even happening in the first place.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to all of our ideas. There's actually more we cut out because there's just too much to share. So you know where to find us. And if you like this kind of information, share it with someone that can really receive this value. We want to get the word out that health and wellness doesn't have to be intimidating, and we want to keep the positive vibes going. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. Have a good weekend. Bye.
Bye.